The choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello! My name is Stephen Briggs. I am Chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 144. Level up, save more money. Saving money is much easier said than done in today's environment. And Americans today are some of the worst in the world at it. This was not always the case. If we go back 50 years, the average American household saved well over 10% of their earnings in a variety of forms, whether that was cash savings, investment savings. But Americans were considerably better savers through the 60s, through the 70s, and into the 80s. As the late 80s and into the 90s emerged, we started to see that drop precipitously. And there are a couple of key forces that I think played a big part in this. One being that media was becoming ever more prolific. You saw in the 90s the 24-hour news cycle emerge. And then the burgeoning of the internet, which not only has provided incredible opportunities with respect to promoting higher education, higher levels of equality, the incredible ways we can connect and communicate and whatnot, but it also provided a giant funnel of direct consumption. And so, that has, has an impact when you can have things directly to you immediately without having to go to a store or go through a big box to make that happen. And then social media just put it on steroids by being able to instantly share all the things you're doing and seeing and having and being. And so from all the different ways we can be notified, emailed, told about what to consume, we're bombarded with advertising. Let alone even when we sit down and use an app or something, more often than not, there's at least one, if not several, ads. So the bottom line is that we're constantly bombarded with advertising like no one ever before. And then on top of it, the other thing too is that the feedback loop for saving money is practically nil. Maybe your banking app or investment app might send you a notification, but usually for privacy concerns, people turn this stuff off it doesn't exist. You can't really share on social media your bank account. I mean, you could, I suppose, or your investment account. You'll probably lose friends and whatnot fairly quickly. But I mean, the idea of, society does not receive that, hey, look at me, I bought 5 shares of Apple today, in the same way or the same glamour as look at my new iPhone. Even though in one situation you are buying part ownership of the company, and in the other you're buying the product that which other people who own that company are profiting from. And these are treated very differently. So how people spend their money and show off you have that dopamine and that adrenaline that comes with, I spend this money, I show off my toy, my vacation, my car, my whatever, and it hits a certain way. And saving money just doesn't have that, by and large. Putting money into investments doesn't really have that. It's one of the reasons why when I'm sitting with clients and talking through, we talk through, and especially when investments have grown precipitously, I like calling this out when savings is up to a point, I call this out because there is no other outside positive reinforcement. And so that is what you're competing against. You are competing against all the things that want to draw what you make away from you. And it's all a trade-off. And so it's important to think about what those trade-offs are. Like, for example, when you go and put $10,000 worth of spend on a credit card and say, I'm going to pay that off at, you know, 10%, 15%, 20%, how many hours you're having to work just to pay for the financing on it is silly. So even when you're going and paying stuff down like that, you're making saving easier for yourself. And that's what I want to talk about, is that there are ways we can make saving money an easier and more natural process in our finances. And I've got six clear ways to do that. First one being, the biggest hurdle for most people is just getting started. So if you don't have a high yield savings account, open one. You can do it in 5 minutes online. And there are multiple vendors that offer that are large institutions, good banks that you're not going to be worried about whether or not they're going to exist tomorrow. That offer high yield savings accounts that today in August of 2023 pay in excess of 4% yield. And so good high yield savings accounts, 4% plus in terms of what your return is. They have no fees. There's no saving minimums. You can put $50 in and earn that 4%. Many of them are typically online only, which is actually a really good thing, because savings accounts that are online only typically do not have a debit card, do not have a checking feature. This prevents fraud and abuse. This also makes it harder for you to draw money out. Like, you have to sit at a computer or sit in front of the app and go through the process of taking money out of emergency savings. And so savings being out of sight, out of mind, super simple, not really that easy to get to, and earning a good yield, I think is amazing. And it's not that hard to get to. If you get in your account, like, normally 1 to 2 business days for a transfer of funds. So if you really need the funds, it's usually not that hard to get them out. But as much as you can make your savings out of sight and out of mind and just let that thing sit and build and grow, the better. That's number one. Get started. Number two, once you have an account, or if you already have savings and investment accounts, if you don't have automatic contributions set up automatic contributions. Get this. If you made just a $20 contribution each week over the course of a year, you'll have saved $1,000. $20 a week alone, after 30 years with a 4% rate of return, would mean that you saved over $60,000. And you know that half of that is interest. So there's $30,000 there of that $60,000 that you did not have to work harder for. All you had to do is let your capital go to work for you. If you were investing and you earned even a long-term S&P 500 average rate of return, I think I ran in my number here, 9.5%. That number is over $150,000. $20 a week means about $30,000 over 30 years, pays $150,000. That's 5x-ing your money, and all you had to do was deposit and have that money invest and reinvest. And that's without our awesome strategies here at Briggs Financial. That's without anyone work. That's literally is just sticking it in VOO and being done with the matter. VOO being Vanguard's 500 index fund ETF. Just so we're clear on that, that's the ticker symbol for it. So stick it in VOO, mindless strategy, throw it in for 30 years. If you earn 9.5%, you 5x'd your money over that time. Not bad. And the first hours were considerably more than 5x, but you get my point. That's a significant amount of savings without a lot of extra effort. And obviously more money per month is going to mean higher balances that you can actually build a retirement on. So number two, if you already have savings and investment accounts, set up automatic contributions. That's your step two. Step three, schedule your treats and rewards to help limit those expenses. It is easy when there isn't a plan to see things that you want to enjoy and just decide, well, I'm going to go do that thing. When else am I going to do that? And the problem is, if you keep doing that, you will find that you have no money left. So it's not, you know, by scheduling treats and rewards, you're not, what you're doing is essentially you're doing a couple things. Number one, you're getting rid of any sort of anxiety or FOMO, fear of missing out. No FOMO creep, because you know you're going to go do the thing. You are, or whether you do the thing or enjoy the thing or have the thing, whatever the thing is, you don't have to worry about FOMO because you know it's coming your way. But at the same time, you're now also controlling how much of your discretionary spending is going toward treats and rewards versus getting into those savings and investment accounts and building your future. And once you start really taking control over that by kind of putting it in its box and its place and building a lifestyle that puts it in its box and its place, it becomes easier and easier for you to save more money. So, tip number three, schedule your treats and rewards to help limit those expenses and avoid FOMO. Number four, pay down high interest debt aggressively. I hinted at this at the beginning. But the idea of paying $2,000 or more a year for the privilege of borrowing $10,000 is dumb. It's dumb. So let's not have dumb things happening anymore. Pay off those balances. Attack them. You know, keep a, you know, $2,500 or so in emergency savings, maybe a half a month if you've got, you know, worth of expenses, if you have more than that kind of going on. But pay off those balances and let's move on from being a servant to Visa, American Express, and Care Credit. I'm tired of seeing these people constantly in people's lives. High interest, high expense. Care Credit in particular, they're nasty to deal with if you miss a payment. 0% until you whiff, and then they zap you. Macy's is similar, 0% until you miss, and then they hit you with all that interest. I don't want that risk, and I don't want these people in your life. Pay off these balances, and let's move on from being a servant to these credit card and credit issuing companies. Number five, if you receive unexpected funds, say from a bonus, an inheritance, or a gift, take 10% of it, use it for yourself, and I want you to save the other 90%. So if you get a $5,000 bonus, after taxes, by the way, not pre-tax, so if it's $5,000 after tax, take 500 of that. You decide what you want to do with it. If you want to go out, if you want to take a little vacation, if you want to buy a nice watch or whatever it is, a nice bag, fine. The remaining 4,500, I want to see that in your savings. I want to see that in your investments, or I want to see that paying down high interest debt. And I'm going to say this, if you have high interest debt, forget the present to yourself. Maybe you go out to dinner. Maybe you make that like a 2% gift to yourself because you know you got your treats in advance. If you have that high interest debt, you already did that thing. Now you got to pay that down. So, you know, hate to say it, but you shot yourself in the foot on that. And so don't go, if you're sitting there and you've got that high interest debt, I want to see 98 to 100% paying that down. But if you don't have that high interest debt, and you get that bonus, that gift, that whatever, upward, you know, 10%, go ahead and enjoy it. 90%, save it. You do that, you're going to be real happy with yourself in the future. Number six, and this goes back to last week's podcast, spend smarter. So you have more money you can save. Look at each aspect of your lifestyle and see if there are areas that you could either do without or simply less of, going through your food spending, going through your subscriptions, taking a look at how your house uses energy. Are there different ways that you could become more energy efficient, unplug things, etc., as a means of reducing your footprint that way? One thing we're doing here at our house is growing more food. It's cutting in substantially on our grocery bill because as things are, our crops are coming up, we're able to eat those things and not have to buy them from the grocery store. It saves us quite a bit of money. But there are lots of ways to save money. Maybe you have a bunch of stuff you don't need anymore. Maybe it's time for a garage sale. Maybe it's time to put stuff on Poshmark. Get rid of it. Get that cash back. Then go ahead and use that to either pay down debt or increase your savings. You know, maybe there are some services that you take advantage of to try, you know, help life a little bit, that maybe you can take on some of those responsibilities back. Like, you know, if you have like a lawn care service, but it take you less than an hour to mow the lawn. Hate to say it, I make pretty good money doing this thing, and I still mow my own lawn. Why? Because it's not worth it. You know, one, it's good physical exercise, by the way. Like, mowing a lawn for me takes 45 minutes to an hour. It's 45 minutes to an hour of walking. I mean, so instead of a treadmill, I'm going to be pushing a mower. That's not a bad way to get some good exercise in. But at the same time, you're also, you know, trading back anywhere from 50 to 100 bucks a, you know, a week, or however long it is, a season or whatever, on having someone else do that thing. That can be thousands of dollars a year that you're able to put back into your investment savings. Similarly with house cleaning. I know that it's become more and more trendy and popular that people have someone that comes in and cleans the house a few times a month. If you're looking and wanting to save more money, maybe you cut back one or more of those trips. So if you have someone coming in every month, maybe having them come in every other week, and maybe you're doing a little bit of cleaning on your own. Or if you have someone coming in two times a month, can you cut it back to one deep clean a month and save some money? But the bottom line is that it's trading back that convenience and those services for their cost. And saying, you know, I can do that. I actually am able to do that thing on my own. And I'm going to tell you, cleaning bathroom floors or mowing, you know, I enjoy mowing the lawn. I'd be lying if I said I didn't. But, you know, cleaning bathroom floors, cleaning windows, sweeping floors, etc. It's not the most fun. I get that. But by the same token, what gets to be really difficult in my mind is that if you're, if you're sitting here and you're able to do those things now, it may be hard to imagine somewhere in the future where you may not have the ability to do those things well or nearly as well as you could now. And really the choice becomes, it really comes down to, do you have the resources to have help when you actually need help? If the answer to that is, no, I don't, then that really ought to help like solidify a bit of the decision-making here. If the answer to that is, yeah, you know what, I'm still able to save piles and piles of money and I can afford the house, you know, housekeeper. Okay, I get that. And there are some arguments I could make for the time being saved, the cost being spent, and if that gives someone the ability to make more money, okay, there's probably an argument to make there. But for the vast, vast, vast majority of people, I think there is a glut of these services and how they play into household living. And I get it's easier. I get it's more enjoyable to live without having to do those things or do those things as often. But then on the flip side, you have to recognize that the trade-off is going to be either potentially not having enough money to live on when you can no longer work. And we all do not know when that is, because something health-wise can happen to someone at any time. Or, so it's either that, or you're making the trade-off and saying, I'm going to work longer than I would have had to otherwise, and possibly several years longer than I would have had to otherwise. You know, when I look at like my parents and how they saved money over the years, it was not very easy for them. Our household did not make a ton of money, but there was a commitment to save a significant portion of it, upwards of 25 to 30% of pre-tax income. We lived very, very modestly. But there was also a knowledge that what was happening was basically buying the ability and the freedom to retire whenever one wants to retire, basically. And so, you know, I think about the fact that my dad, you know, many years ago, I want to say he was either 62 or 63, informed his boss one day and just said, I'm giving my 1 month notice and I'm retiring. I'm retiring after 25 years at this job, which the other thing he did, which with a state employee job, and he was an analyst for the state of Michigan, but 25 years, and he was able to buy 5 years at the start of his career. So he worked 25, but it was received pension as though he worked 30 because he supercharged in essentially initially. They let him buy 5 years by putting a good chunk of earnings down right off the bat. But in a nutshell, being able to walk out at 62, 63 years of age and be like, I'm done. I've got good savings. I've got pension. Eventually I'll have Social Security. House is paid for. No other real liabilities. Done. The entire floor of his office was stunned, asking all sorts of questions about, well, how could you even do that? How is that possible? Do you have enough? And the answer is, had enough, because there was a commitment over the decades to make sure that above all else, there was real savings going on. And so when it comes to, you know, the ability to retire and that type of thing, and what the timing is on that, I mean, like I said, our family did not do the big Disney trips. Their family did not have, you know, there were a number of experiences that probably, you know, I know friends of mine had that I probably wish I did on some level. And it just didn't happen. But on the flip side, I also am not worrying as the adult child of my dad about his ability to live and get whatever resources he needs and being able to be comfortable about that. Like my brother and I do not have to worry about him in that regard. And that is what that discipline bought, is for him to be able to live how he wants to live, as freely as he wants to live and whatever he wants to do. And for us as kids to not have to worry about it. And that's what you're setting up. It's options. It's choices. The vast majority of people, when I ask them what they're, when we really drill down why financial planning is important to them, one of the big common themes is the ability to have options. Because so many people are seeing their parents not have options, have to work at 68, 72, 75, or later. And they're looking at that going, oh, not me. Well, here's the catch. We're also living longer. And if we continue to live longer, and I don't expect that trend to outright cease, slow perhaps, but we, you know, compared to people 40 years ago, we're living basically about on average, about a half a decade longer. And so that's many more years where your money needs to be able to provide for you. And the hard part is that, you know, if we're living longer, those years are the non-productive years, not the productive years, unless you're going to work considerably longer, which some people can. But many people can't. Health breaks down, especially if you're in a field that has any degree of labor attached to it. It's hard. I mean, the odds are not in your favor that that's going to work. So you got to have good savings. You got to have stuff built up, and you've got to have some discipline and not, you know, have an over appetite when it comes to the spend side, getting sensitive about where your money is going and making sure it's going in deliberate places that you want it to. So I hope that these six tips, from spending smarter so you have more money to save, taking unexpected funds from a bonus or inheritance and saving 90% or more of it, paying down high interest debt aggressively, scheduling your treats and rewards to limit expenses, setting up automatic contributions to savings and investment accounts, and if you don't already have savings accounts established, to start one today. Costs you nothing. Like I said, there are a number of great large FDIC-insured institutions offering north of 4% interest. Take advantage of one of them. Put something in. And the good ones will let you do it. You know, you'll earn that interest with $20 as much as you'd earn it with $200,000. Very competitive out there right now for savings accounts. So take advantage of that. If you're doing these things, chances are you're really going to, you know, work to level up and save more money. So if you can, if you're doing some of these things, pick one of them and say, you know what, maybe you're doing all these things. And let's say you're putting in $20 a week. Could you up that to 30? Or, you know, it could, or in your 401k, if you're putting in 5%, could you nudge it to 6? Or if you're putting in $300 a month into your Roth, could you find an extra $50 a month and just nudge that up a little bit? And this is what we're talking about when we say leveling up and saving money. It's not about flipping the table on all of your finances and making drastic changes. This is about making adjustments and about making smaller decisions that combined are going to have an outsized impact on the future, especially if you maintain them long term. So just adding a percent doesn't sound like a lot. Adding $50 doesn't sound a lot. And it isn't in the now, but it can have just a massive impact on what you have available to you for your future self when you might need those funds much later on in life. When you want those resources there and you have them, it is because of what you did now to make that happen instead of consuming it all. Which right now, we're at the lowest savings rates that we've basically have ever had in this country since they recorded the information. So to that end, buck the trend of what most households are doing. Level up, save more money. I want to thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. Be sure to like, follow, subscribe, whatever it is, depending on your platform of choice and how you listen to this thing. You can also find the other 143 episodes of Money is Personal at BriggsWealth.com. Make sure to like us, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We have some really great tips, tools, and ideas. Threads as well, brand new Threads. Make sure to follow us on Threads. And get some wonderful financial wisdom from us. You know, it's all there and available for you. And that's the big thing. All of this is, you know, yes, we work with clients. Yes, that's our business. But my biggest goal in opening this firm and working in this industry is to help empower people to make better financial decisions for themselves. I want you to win. I want you to do better. And so what we are sharing here are things that, whether you're working with us or not, you're able to use actively. And I will say even easier when you have someone that can hold you accountable, provide you individualized feedback and individualized recommendations. And that's really what planning is about. It's about having a combination of accountability and feedback and professional guidance tailored to you and support. That's what planning is. At its core, it is not only, yes, making projections sure about the future and talking about your goals and so on, but it's also just making sure that you take the actions, empowering you to take the actions that are in your own best interests to help you do better with your money and live a better life doing so. That's what we do here every single day. Thank you again so much for listening. Have a great week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.